Rule of a woman. I was about to formulate some excuse, blame the wine. But then James said, "She's just some woman, Ansley. For Jack, you're..." He paused. "You're the moon." I smiled and took a sip of wine. As I swallowed, I hoped against hope that James was right. I hoped that someday, somehow, Jack would find his way back to me, that he could find it in his heart to choose me again, that despite what I had put him through, he would take the moon over Georgia.
13. Top of the Food Chain. Sloan. It was the first time I had slept through the night since I got the news about Adam. Maybe it was the rocking of the boat, the way the waves tossed you ever so gently, like a baby in his mother's arms. I woke up that morning to the sun coming through the porthole in my room, and praise the Lord, I missed my children. I wanted to squeeze them close to me, run my fingers through their hair, and kiss the tips of their little noses. The hardest part about Adam being gone was the numbness, the coldness, the horrible fear. My emotions had shut off. With the water surrounding me and the light streaming in, I felt like a mother again. I felt my heart ache for my boys. I felt stronger, cleansed, as only the sky as seen from the sea can do. I walked up the stairs and out through the main cabin. I could see my bikini-clad sisters sipping mimosas at the table. "There's our girl," Emerson exclaimed when she saw me. Even in my self-absorbed sorrow, I couldn't help but notice how prominent her collarbones seemed. She handed me a croissant. "They're so divine that even Caroline ate one." I knew she wanted me to respond with fake shock that Caroline had eaten anything resembling a calorie and play into the repartee. But I couldn't smile and laugh and pretend nothing was wrong. I didn't have the energy. Caroline didn't say anything, but she pointed to the corner where they had set up an easel and a canvas, along with brushes and paints. I shook my head. "No. You know it will make you feel better," Caroline said. She wasn't wrong. I looked out at the sun, glazing the blue water, the wind cooling the air. It would make me feel better. Eventually. But first, it would absolutely wring me out, gut me to the point I wasn't sure I would survive, and bring me, like a chemo patient, to the brink of death before reviving me at the last second. I wasn't there yet. Emerson reached for my hand. "Where's Viv?" I asked. "Sleeping," Caroline replied. "Reveille is going to be a rude awakening for her." Reveille. Each morning at 6:30 sharp, those notes rang out through post with a shock of cannon fire that startled me every time. The memory made me homesick. I looked at Caroline. And for the first time in a while, I really saw her. The girl she had been. My best friend, my partner in crime, my support system in everything I did. She had saved me so many times. It seemed fitting that she would be trying to save me again. I looked out over the water and it hit me. Does anyone else find it a little strange that we're on a boat called the Miss Ansley, when our mother mercilessly dumped the poor man? They knew I was the only one not totally thrilled about Mom dating after Dad passed away. When we were young, it horrified me to my very core, and I still had my misgivings. But we all loved Jack. He was perfect for our mother. "Well, Mom wants to be available for all of us," Caroline said. She trailed off, and I felt a pang of guilt because taking care of all of us meant taking care of me. But my husband was MIA. For once, I felt like I deserved the extra attention.
"Do you think she's scared or something?"
Emerson picked up. Of falling in love again? Of losing another man she loves? Caroline bit her lip. I try not to think about it because when I do, I come up with so many far-fetched reasons why she won't be with Jack. I cocked my head to the side. Maybe it was my near-comatose state, but I hadn't thought about anything like that. Caroline, your imagination is too vivid. Even though she was trying to be upbeat and witty, she seemed distant. Care, you okay? I asked. She shrugged. It's just sad, you know? What sad? Everything. Mom loves Jack, yet she thinks she can't be with him. You love Adam, and he's MIA. I love James, and he betrayed me. She bit her lip like she always did when she was trying to hold back tears and looked out over the side of the boat. I hate seeing you like this, Caroline, Emerson said. It's your life and your decision, but I just feel like you should move on. It's not worth being miserable over. Caroline and I shared a look. Emerson wasn't a mother. She hadn't been married. She didn't understand. Em, Caroline said. Have a brand new baby and let some judge tell you he and your other kid are going to be away from you every other weekend and Wednesday nights, and then call me. Emerson rolled her eyes. I know, you two are wives and mothers and I don't understand anything. I just wonder if maybe it shouldn't be easier. I wanted to point out that her relationship with Mark didn't seem terribly easy, but I bit my tongue. Caroline rolled her eyes. The hard part, Caroline said, is that I still love James so much. But it will always be different now. For all these years, I've had this sort of warm glow of knowing he loves me more than anything. And now it's gone. I'm mourning the life I lost. She looked at me and winced. I'm sorry. Poor choice of words. I crossed my legs on the bench and shook my head. No, you're mourning. I get that. Just because I'm going through something doesn't mean you aren't going through your own thing. So what if you make something new? Emerson asked, and I finally felt like she was getting it. You didn't exactly help with that, Emerson. She looked shocked. How does this have anything to do with me? Caroline laughed incredulously. Are you serious? Gee, I don't know. Maybe because you played Edie Fitzgerald in a movie and made the media storm a million times worse? Emerson had been apologetic then, but she wasn't now. Like you wouldn't have done the same thing? I've seen you do way worse to get ahead, so don't act all holier than thou. Girls, I said, let's just calm down and talk this out. Talk it out, Caroline said, and I immediately regretted turning her fury toward me. She played my husband's mistress on TV. What's there to talk about? Emerson crossed her arms. It was a part. They both looked at me. Look, I said, I can't answer this one, but I wouldn't have done it, Emerson. Of course you wouldn't have, she replied. I was taken aback. What's that supposed to mean? What it means, she shot back, is that you're just like our mother, vanilla, predictable. Never done a shocking thing in your life. I smirked because, believe you me, I could blow that theory right up. Fine, Emerson said, stomping into the salon. Just gang up on me like you always do. Do we always gang up on her? Caroline asked. I scrunched my nose. I'm pretty sure we don't. I paused. But she isn't wrong about finding happiness in a new way. Caroline softened and nodded. I know. I'm going to try. I really am. Do you think you're going to let him move back in? I asked. I don't know, Caroline said. She paused. Maybe when the summer is over. There she is, I said, interrupting Caroline as Vivi emerged from the cabin, bleary-eyed. Her hair was messy from sleep, and she was wearing a huge T-shirt and gym shorts. but she was still beautiful with that fresh face you really couldn't appreciate until you were older. She was a little Caroline, no doubt about it. But she was sweet. An upgrade, if you asked me. This was a conversation she definitely didn't need to hear. 2 hours later, Emerson had reappeared, and I heard her quietly apologize to Caroline. I felt like I deserved an apology, too, but I wasn't going to rock the boat. I announced on the radio, "Camp Seafarer Tower, this is the vessel Miss Ansley, requesting permission to dock." I laughed when I heard the signature response.
"Ahoy there, Miss Ansley."
"Ahoy there," I said. Vivi rolled her eyes and I said, "Oh, sugar, get used to it."
"Take a southwest approach,"
the voice on the radio said. There was a pause followed by,
"Welcome back to camp, Captain Caroline and mates Sloan and Emerson."
We all laughed. This was one monster of a boat to dock, and the current was ripping through the channel. Emerson was in charge of the bow line, and I had the stern. "Bow to stern," Caroline said, the steering wheel spinning through her hands. "Actually," she said, reversing the port engine at the last minute, "stern to bow. The current's got me." "Switch the lines," I yelled to Emerson as I pulled the rope out of the port cleat and moved it starboard. I always wondered why you couldn't just keep lines on both sides of the boat, but Caroline always chastised me, saying that wasn't proper yachting. I recognized the camp director as she hustled down the dock. "Caroline, Sloan, Emerson," she cried. Seeing the campers captaining their sunfish and tiny Boston whalers brought back fond memories of making friends, sharing Reese's cups from the canteen, writing letters to the boys at Camp Seagull, and sneaking out of the cabin at night to meet said boys on the golf course. It was all so innocent, so simple. I wanted to hug Vivi and beg her to never grow up. Later that night, so late it might have been morning, it was as if it were calling to me, as though I could feel it. The crisp linens and bedding my mom had chosen for the room on the boat draped around me. They made me feel protected and secure in the way only the most comfortable beds can. It was cool and perfectly dark in the boat that night, yet I couldn't sleep, because I could feel it. I ignored it for what must have been hours, but finally, like a clandestine lover you know is wrong but can't resist, I went up to that canvas. I rolled up the sleeves of Adam's Oxford, soft and thin from being washed so many times, like another layer of my own skin. It felt like his arms around me, and I imagined him whispering in my ear that he loved me. The water was perfectly still, the moon's reflection bright on the surface. As the stars danced and twinkled, I prayed that my husband was fighting, that he was feeling me supporting and loving him because I was, with every breath. My easel set up, overlooking the boats in the Beaufort, North Carolina harbor where we had moored for the night. I tentatively swiped my brush into the paint, and with that one motion, I was gone, consumed by another world that lived inside my head, a world that was trying desperately to get out, to escape the darkness and burst into the light. I've always been cautious with my paintings. I'm a perfectionist by nature and refine and edit until they are perfect. But not that night. That night I tore through the canvases, strokes flying. I didn't care if the paintings were complete, didn't want them to be perfect. They weren't supposed to be perfect. They were supposed to heal me, to give me courage, to set me free. I let myself feel the thing I thought I shouldn't. It welled up inside me and took over my mind, my body, my brush. Anger. Not only that Adam had left me, that he was sacrificing himself, us, our family, but also about everything in our marriage that had ever been tough, Every time I'd wanted to stand up for myself but hadn't. Every time I had wanted to speak my piece but held it in. For the first time, I didn't feel guilt. Just pure, unadulterated, hot rage. This stroke was for all the times Adam came home and didn't ask if he could help with the kids. This one was for the times he looked disapprovingly at a pile of laundry on the floor when I had cleaned up after babies all day. These were for using my toothbrush, leaving the toilet seat up, refusing to leave his dirty shoes by the back door. I felt it all those emotions I had buried so deep. Then when I was done, I cried. Not a cry of fragility, but cleansing. I knew my husband wasn't perfect. Admitting that to myself made me feel a little better. He was a good man, a good husband, but he wasn't a saint, and neither was I. My only prayer was that the perfectly imperfect world we had created together would continue to spin. As the sun rose, bright and bold and beautiful, I heard Caroline's panic-laced voice calling, "Sloan, I'm up here," I called, yawning. She appeared in the doorway, clad in a short silk and lace nightgown. "You're wearing that to sleep alone on a boat?" I asked. She grinned at me. "You scared me to death. What did you think, that I'd jumped or something?" She shook her head. "Not jumped. You wouldn't kill yourself and leave your children, but maybe swept out to sea in your grief, like in a Victorian novel." She finally looked down around my feet. "Oh my gosh. Wow." She sat down on the deck of the boat, crossing her legs in a very unladylike manner for someone wearing a tiny nightgown. "Caroline, honestly," I said. She gasped, ignoring me. "These are amazing. The best paintings you've ever done, for real." They were all shades of gray, silver, and a little white. Not as much black as I had expected. That was how my life felt now. Less dark, a little brighter, but still completely devoid of color. "Pain will do that to you, I guess." "Girls," I heard Emerson groan. "It's like 6 a.m. She stopped in her tracks and picked up the first painting I had done. "Whoa." She held it to her chest. "This one's mine. Sign it now. I'm taking it to my room." I laughed. "You can have it. You don't have to hoard it away." "Get your bikinis on," Caroline said, clapping. "We have big plans today." "I'll get breakfast ready," Emerson said. She pointed to me. "You keep painting." "Then I guess I'll drive," Caroline said, as if that weren't a foregone conclusion. "Should we check in with Mom and the kids?" I called to Caroline. "Later." I stretched my shoulders and wrists. I had one more painting in me. The brushstrokes became less precise as Caroline cut through the waves, but that was the beauty of it. This was the painting that would always remind me of this trip, my sisters, and how they saved me, pulling me out of the sea when I was certain I was drowning. 30 minutes later, Caroline was expertly docking in front of some tennis courts and a gazebo, while a very taut, tan 20-something boy grabbed our lines and tied us up. A large sign read, "Private Club, docking for members only." "Caroline," I whispered. "What are we doing here? You aren't a member of this club." She looked toward heaven like I was dense. She and Emerson were already out of the boat and held their hands out to me.
"She's a beauty,"
the boy on the dock said. Caroline put her arm around me and said, "She is, isn't she? She's my sister." I rolled my eyes. "I think he meant the boat." "Ah, yes, well, she's a beauty, too."
"Do you have your membership card?" Doc Boy asked.
My heart raced. "Tanner has it," Caroline said. He grinned. He was very, very cute.
I turned toward Emerson, but she didn't seem to notice. By all means, go right ahead.
Caroline linked her arms through mine and Emerson's. It's good to have friends in high places, she said.
Who's Tanner? Emerson asked.
Top of the food chain, Caroline said. The person who runs it all.
I assumed she meant the owner or manager, but when Emerson cocked her head to the side, Caroline said,
The bartender, of course.
Before we had even reached the clubhouse across the street, yellow and white striped beach loungers with matching umbrellas had been swept out for us.
Miss Murphy?
Our beach attendant said to Emerson.
Someone is bringing down morning refreshments for you right away.
Oh, okay, she stammered. Thank you.
I laughed and shook my head.
You used Emerson's name to get us in the club for the day, didn't you?
Of course I did, Caroline said, as if offended I would ask something so obvious.
I do it all the time.
She grinned at Em. I settled into my cushioned chair.
Maybe you aren't so insignificant after all, Caroline said to Emerson.
Suddenly, I was more certain than ever that Caroline was always up to something. She was making sure her sister knew that while, no, she might not have made it as big as she had dreamed, she had made it pretty far. Emerson was already sunning her long, tanned limbs, and I admired and envied the line of muscle that ran from her ankle all the way up to her hip bone. She was spectacular. The beach club probably granted us entrance so people could stare at her all day.
We'll talk about this later, Emerson said. When I'm not so relaxed.
Excuse me. I looked up to see a woman about our mother's age in a huge hat and sunglasses standing over Emerson with a napkin and a pen. Emerson Murphy, may I have your autograph, please?
Emerson smiled.
Of course.
I just loved you in Secret Lovers. You made that movie. I can't wait to see what you do next.
Caroline and I smiled at each other.
Miss Murphy?
Another beach attendant said quietly.
Your publicist told us when she called that Bellinis were your favorite. These were made from organic, local Georgia peaches and Moet and Chandon, as requested.
Emerson lowered her sunglasses at Caroline, who was trying to avoid her glance.
Really, Caroline?
Moet and Chandon in a Bellini?
Take a sip and see what a difference it makes. It was terrific.
I will ignore just this once, Emerson said, that Bellinis are your favorite, not mine.
If you're going to use my name, at least get my drinks right.
They don't carry Smirnoff Ice here, Emerson, Caroline joked.
Only that's where Caroline was wrong.
An hour later, a very handsome young beach waiter was asking,
A fresh towel, Mrs. Beaumont?
Caroline unrolled it, and hiding inside was a Smirnoff Ice. A hot one. The game of icing someone had been out of practice for years, as far as I know, but it was something my sisters and I used to love to do to each other. Like a champ, Caroline, perfectly coiffed and manicured, got down on one knee in the sand, popped the top, and chugged that hot Smirnoff Ice. She dramatically wiped her mouth while Emerson howled with laughter. And then it happened. The thing I was afraid I was no longer capable of, the thing I thought I might never do again. As a laugh escaped from my throat, I realized that no one, and no Bellini in the world, could make me feel as carefree as my sisters. A few hours later, back on the boat, my sister was saying, in typical Caroline fashion,
Girls, the beach walk was great, but we need a little yoga Lattes before we get going.
Emerson and I groaned.
No one wants to exercise after drinking on the beach all afternoon, Caroline. That sounds awful.
She was already setting up the mats on the bow. I gave Emerson a withering look.
Why? I asked. Why do we keep her in our lives?
I don't know, Emerson said. I can't figure it out.
It's because you love me and you know I'm right, Caroline said.
Damn it, Emerson said.
We were only into our second sun salutation when I noticed Emerson's form looked a little off. Caroline must have noticed it too because she jolted up and screamed, Em! Right as Emerson collapsed to the bow, landing solidly on her right side. Oh my God, I cried, running over to her. Did she pass out? Caroline asked as we crouched around our sister, who had opened her eyes and was looking at us, confused. She tried to sit up.
No, wait, I said.
What is it again? Caroline asked.
If it's red, raise the head, I said.
If it's pale, raise the tail, Emerson finished. No permanent brain damage.
She's definitely red, Caroline said, sitting Emerson up.
I'm so sorry, Emerson, I'm so sorry.
It's not your fault, she said. I think I'm just dehydrated.
I looked at Caroline skeptically. I think we need to get you to a doctor just in case, I said. Caroline nodded in agreement.
You guys, absolutely not, Emerson said. It's hot, I haven't eaten much today, and I've been drinking. I'm totally fine.
I say better safe than sorry, Caroline said. We can get an Uber, run to urgent care.
I said no,
Emerson said, taking charge. I ran into the salon and grabbed a water for her. As she sipped, she said,
Okay, yoga is over. Caroline, you go drive. I want to wake up in Savannah.
Caroline looked at me warily. Emerson, she said, trying again. We are going to be out at sea. If you need help, the Coast Guard is going to come, and it's going to be very dramatic.
Is that what you want? I teased. A dramatic rescue at sea by a hot sailor?
She smiled.
No, I'm fine. I'm ready to get home.
I miss Mark. I shrugged at Caroline.
If you're sure, she said. Totally sure.
Emerson turned over her water bottle, gasped, and threw it to the ground like it had suddenly grown fangs and bitten her.
What? Caroline asked. Are you kidding me? You're feeding me water out of a number 6 plastic? Have I taught you nothing?
I rolled my eyes at Caroline and said,
Yeah, I think she's fine.
As Emerson chanted, 5, 4, 1, and 2. All the rest are bad for you.
I will get you non-poisonous water immediately, I said sarcastically as we helped Emerson up and into the air conditioning.
I handled the lines while the boat idled and we were off again. It wasn't until I went to go check on Emerson that I saw them. My heart almost stopped beating. Her cheekbone had a deep, dark bruise, and her arm was covered in what looked like a rash, but upon closer inspection was a cluster of tiny bruises.
Oh my God, Emerson, I said.
She shrugged.
You know I bruise really easily.
Caroline took a couple of steps toward us and gasped.
Emerson, that is not normal.
I agreed. She bit her lip.
I haven't felt great lately. Kind of dizzy, and I'm always exhausted. Just walking up the stairs makes my heart race.
She pulled down the side of her bathing suit bottoms to reveal a huge red and purple bruise. Back at the helm, Caroline said,
Look, the moment we get back to Peachtree Bluff, you're going to the doctor.
She paused.
In fact, James and I have to go to the Hamptons for a benefit. Why don't you two come with us and we can get you to one of our doctor friends?
Now my heart was racing for 2 reasons. There was no way, especially now, I could get on an airplane or face New York, neither of which I'd done since 9/11. And there was definitely something wrong with my little sister. Emerson shook her head.
No. I don't want Mom to know anything is going on. I'm sure it's nothing. I'll just run to a doctor in Peachtree.
And if it's something more, I want you to be seen in New York, Caroline said.
Fine,
Emerson agreed, exhaling. She looked at us.
Promise me, she said. Not a word to Mom. She has enough on her plate.
Caroline and I simultaneously put our three fingers up in Scout's honor. I hated keeping secrets from my mother, but we had done it before. One more time probably wouldn't hurt.
14. Scary small person. Ansley. We made it, I said to James over my car's Bluetooth speaker as I was pulling out of Linda's driveway in Athens's charming Five Points neighborhood. We sure did, he said. These last few days had really brought out a different side of James. I was beginning to see him not as the slick, suit-wearing lawyer, but a family man capable of standing by my side when the chips were down. Like when I was drowning in poop and finger paint. Against all odds, I had even managed to put a presentation together for Jack. You should know that Jack's coming by the house at 3. So what you're delicately telling me is to keep it clean? I laughed. Exactly. It would have been more professional to have our meeting in my shop, but I wanted Jack to be in a home I had put my stamp on from top to bottom. And I knew it was childish, but after seeing him with Georgia a few nights earlier, I wanted him to remember what it was like for us to be more than client and decorator. At 3 on the dot, Jack walked through the front door, Biscuit licking his bare ankles with gusto. I snapped my fingers at her. Biscuit, stop that! Jack laughed as he walked into the living room. I was sitting cross-legged on the floor, surrounded by paint chips, wallpaper books, fabric swatches, and furniture catalogs.
Wow, he said. This is not what the other decorators brought by to show me.
They aren't as brilliant as I am, I deadpanned. He nodded.
Clearly.
He paused.
Are the girls having fun?
Oh, yes, I said. It was very, very kind of you to let them use your boat. He sat down on the floor across from me.
How are they, Ansley? Are they okay?
I want to do something to help. I really do. I smiled at him, that familiar warmth running through me. He was such a kind-hearted soul, a generous man. That was what had always drawn me to him. Caroline is just going to have to feel it, I think. And Sloane... I shook my head, hoping he didn't hear the crack in my voice. But he must have, because he scooted beside me and pulled me into him.
I want so badly to be mad at you, he said. I want to hate you for not giving me what I want. But then I think of all you're going through. And I understand you a little more. And I can't hate you as much as I want to.
He kissed the top of my head, and a little laugh broke through my tears. This is the least professional interview I've ever done, I said.
Ansley, we both know I don't know a thing about being a parent, but I know about you. I know they are your life. But don't lose yourself in this.
I looked up into his earnest face.
Please.
I'm trying, I said. That's why I want to do this house so badly. It will help me focus my attention somewhere other than on Sloane and Adam, and even Caroline and James. Their unhappiness is so consuming.
How's your mom?
I shrugged, and as if she heard him, she called from her room. Ansley?
I've got her, Ans, James called from the kitchen.
He walked into my mother's room, saying, Ansley is with a client, remember? As I was saying, she seemed better. James walked in.
I'm sorry, Ansley, he said, but I think you'd better come in here.
I got up, and Jack followed me. Mom was looking around the room and glanced up at me when I came in. What's wrong, Mom?
I could tell she was confused. "Whose suitcase is that?" she asked, pointing to the corner of the room. "What?" I asked. "Whose suitcase?" she repeated. "Well," I said slowly, "it's yours, Mom. You've had it for like 20 years. "It's not mine," she said indignantly. I looked at Jack helplessly. He rolled the suitcase to her. "See," he said, pointing to the plate at the top of the suitcase. "Those are my initials," she said. "Right." "My initials, but not my suitcase." Then she peered at Jack. "And who in the world are you?" "Oh, my God," I said. "Is she having a stroke?" "Ansley, for heaven's sake, I'm not having a stroke." Then she looked up. "Jack, why in God's holy name do you have my suitcase over here? It belongs in the corner." Jack looked concerned. I was sure I looked horrified. This was what I had been talking about for months now, what the doctors assured me was just old age confusion. "Mom, do you know where you are?" Now she really looked confused. "Darling, of course. I'm in the same bedroom I've had since I was a little girl at my parents' house in Peachtree Bluff, which is now your house in Peachtree Bluff, much to the chagrin of your brother John." She grinned at me. "And this is Jack, the man you have loved since you were a teenager, but are too foolhardy to let back into your heart now." Jack laughed. "She seems fine to me." I sighed in relief. "Thanks, Mom. That's great." Whatever it was seemed to have passed. I wanted to take her to the doctor or at least call, but every time I did, they acted like I was this delusional woman who couldn't accept that her mother was aging. "I'm so sorry, Jack," I said when we were back in the living room. "It's okay," he said. "It's hard. When that started to happen to my dad, it nearly broke my heart. The first time he didn't remember who I was." He looked away from me, and I wanted to wrap him in a hug and kiss him. It was one of those moments, not the first and probably not the last, that made me realize what Jack and I had had as kids was nice. But what we could have as adults could be so much more. He was different. I was different. But we still shared so many important things. "Before crisis strikes again," I said, holding up a handful of swatches. Jack softened and put his hand up to stop me, the hostility of move-in day behind us. "Of course I want you to decorate my house, Ansley. That was half the reason I bought it." I smiled coyly. "You won't be sorry." "I know I won't be sorry," he said. He trailed off, smiling. "Do you remember the night we fell asleep on Starlight Island?" I laughed. "Remember? Oh, I'll never forget. And we woke up and it was 4:30 in the morning?" He nodded. "We paddled as fast as we could from Starlight back to the dock, and as we were running across the street, you stopped in front of my new house and said, 'Man, that one could really shine in the right hands.'" That had been a perfect night, as so many of those young nights with Jack had been. Besides the fear that my parents would wake up and kill me for spending the night out with a boy, of course. That night, I remember thinking I would give anything to buy you that house, to live there with you and make it our own. "Jack," I said. He shook his head. "No, I get it, Anne. This isn't me coming on to you. It's just I could tell in the yard that I had hurt you, that you thought I didn't remember. But I did. I remember." "Well, thank you." He smiled. "And also Caroline told me to buy it, and she's a really, really scary small person."
Between my laughter, I said, "Caroline told you to buy it?" He winked at me. She had some notion that maybe you would fall in love with the boy next door. All those years ago, I had fallen in love with the boy next door, or the boy down the street, anyway. Sitting with Jack now, I had the feeling that maybe, just maybe, I could fall in love with the man next door, too.
15. The Brightness of the Stars. Sloane. November 28, 2010.
Dear Sloane, even out here, in a dry desert that it feels like God surely has forgotten, the stars shine bright and the moon hangs low, and for a moment, between the gunshots and the shrapnel, the wounded soldiers and the innocent civilians lost in the mix, there is a moment, just a moment, that still feels like a miracle. That still feels like life can be beautiful and good. I'm convinced that these moments are what make up our lives, that the moments that are nothing short of miraculous are the ones that define who we are, that we will remember, always. At least, that's what I tell myself, because I'd hate to think that I will remember the fighting, but I will forget the brightness of the stars. All my love, Adam. I prayed all day, every day, that God would bring Adam home to me unharmed. My faith was my sanity, and I wondered, not for the first time, how my mom survived everything she had without belief in a higher power. My faith was one of the greatest gifts I had. Because of it, I knew that even when I couldn't quite see the end, everything would work out the way it was supposed to. That didn't keep me from feeling utterly terrified and devastated, but it helped me put one foot in front of the other when I didn't want to. That day, I wanted to. I could practically smell my children, feel their sticky little hands on my face, and hear their sweet, small voices, so filled with excitement and joy. When I walked through the door, my two boys flew into my arms so quickly that they almost knocked me over, giggling and covering my face with kisses. It occurred to me that in a world where children's laughter exists, all can never really be lost. I hadn't even finished kissing them before I looked up and saw that Caroline had hung one of my paintings from the boat over the mantel. "It's perfect," Mom said. "It changes the entire room." "Aren't the grays so good?" Caroline asked. Emerson walked through the front door, canvases in her arms. "Sloane!" Mom gasped, admiring each one. "You should sell these." I was going to say no. These canvases were too important to me. They were my heart and soul, all of my emotions draining out from my fingertips and onto the canvas. But then I remembered. I needed the money. This could be the answer to my prayers. It could get me out of the mess I'd made and help me start over. I picked up one of the canvases. Sure, these paintings may have helped bring me out of the darkness, but if I could let them go, I would be free. Not forever, but for now. "Not yet, Mom. I'm not ready, but soon." Granny walked in wearing a beautiful yellow pantsuit. Her hair was freshly combed and her makeup expertly applied with a steady hand, but I would never get used to seeing her with a cane. I didn't like it. It made her seem old. I didn't want her to be old. I wanted her to be young and so very alive. I wanted her to walk on the beach with us, take the boat over to Starlight Island. I wanted her to be immortal. As foolish as it seems, I almost believed she was. She hugged me and kissed my cheek. "We had so much fun with the boys, darling. They are precious." Then she hugged Caroline. "And that James." She paused. "I hate him much less now." We all laughed as Mark burst through the door.
Emerson jumped into his arms like she hadn't seen him in months, kissing him passionately.
"Darling, for heaven's sake," Grammy said.
Mark backed away from Emerson, assessing her.
"Why do you have on long sleeves?"
Caroline and I shared a glance. Mark was studying Emerson's face. As he said,
"Oh my God, Emerson!"
She pulled him out the door, and I knew he had noticed her bruise. I looked at Caroline again, and she mouthed, "Doctor, today." I motioned toward the front door with my head, and Caroline followed them. She could handle that one. I had other things on my plate, namely paying my bills. 10 minutes later, I was sitting on the end of the bed, thinking about miracles. My dad always believed in them. Adam certainly did. And me? I did to an extent, I suppose. But while a lot of great things had happened to me in my life, I wasn't sure that any of them would qualify as a miracle. I mean, miracle is a pretty big word. Something that defies logic, that defies explanation. Something that you seemingly willed into being. But that was the only single explanation for what was happening now. I just kept staring at the $0 due. How was that possible? After years of feeling sick every month, of making minimum payments and watching the overall balance climb higher and higher, of being terrified Adam, or anyone for that matter, might find out this terrible secret that, while on the outside I appeared to be this wonderful steward of our family's money, in reality I was nothing more than a fraud. I had been given a clean slate, I heard Caroline's voice. "You're going to burn a hole through it." She sat down beside me and I clutched the paper to my chest so she couldn't see. "Is that your credit card bill?" she asked. I wanted to lie. I was so embarrassed about my spending habits and how it had been nearly impossible for me to support our family on our salary. But she was my sister. Maybe there shouldn't be big secrets between sisters. Besides, this was Caroline. I could tell her now, or she would pull it out of me later. I looked at her in amazement. "It's gone," I said, still totally mystified, looking at the zeros again and praying it wasn't a glitch in the computer system. "Your credit card is gone?" "No, my balance." She looked at me like I was dense. "Well, yeah, it's gone," she said. "I paid it." I could feel my eyes widen. "You paid my credit card bill?" She nodded. "Somebody had to pay your bills while you were in a coma in here." She paused. "And no offense, but how in the hell did you ever, ever think you were going to pay it?" I threw my arms around her neck with so much force that I nearly knocked us both off the bed. I could feel the tears in my throat. "I will pay you back, I promise," I said. "This is the nicest thing anyone has ever done for me." "Sloan, what were you thinking?" I shrugged, ashamed. "I don't know. It's what I do to keep the boys from feeling sad their dad is gone. I buy them stuff they don't need and I can't afford." I sighed. "I always assumed we were going to get the money Dad had left us and it would be fine. Then I couldn't stop, and the bill kept getting higher, and I would save up a little to pay it down, and then something would happen, and we'd need the money." I trailed off, envying my sister's life. She didn't have these worries. She had an endless amount of money at her disposal. I couldn't imagine what that felt like, how freeing it must be to know that no matter what, you were going to be okay. You could pay your way out of whatever mess you spent yourself into. We didn't have that luxury. I didn't want to wound Adam's pride, but I needed that security. I needed to know that if something happened, I wouldn't have to go running to my mom or sister. I could in an emergency, of course, but a run-up credit card bill didn't feel like an emergency, per se. I needed a job. Caroline took my hand.
I totally get that, Sloan. But they don't care about all that stuff.
I nodded, tears gathering in my eyes.
The worst part is that it felt like every month I was lying to Adam. I was living in fear that he would get to the mailbox before I did, open my credit card bill and see what I had done.
She ran her fingers through her hair, patted my leg, and said, "It's all cleaned up now. Don't worry. But don't do it again." I shook my head.
"Here, I'm paying you back."
I couldn't begin to imagine where I would get that kind of money, but I would, little by little, I would pay my sister back the debt I owed. She shook her head.
"No, Sloan, I don't want you to. I'd put something aside for a rainy day, and this was a rainy day." She cleared her throat. "So now you will owe me, and trust me, I will cash in the favor in a big way."
I threw my arms around her neck again.
"Whatever you want, Caroline, honestly, anything."
She raised her eyebrow, and I realized I shouldn't have offered that, but I felt free, like I was running through an open field of daisies, and now the credit card would be used solely for emergencies, just like Adam and I had always intended. Part of me felt bad for not paying my sister back, but I also knew it was completely fruitless to argue with her. It always had been, even when we were kids, even about the big things. In the fifth grade, when we were studying genetics, I became obsessed with the idea that my father didn't give me any of my DNA, and I desperately wanted to know who had. Where were my brown eyes from? The dimple in my chin? Was my biological father good at math like I was? I'd gone to my parents, but they told me that Caroline and I had to agree about whether to find out who our biological father was, since we had the same donor. I thought that would be simple. Why wouldn't Caroline want to know who her father was? Only she didn't. She was adamant.
"Why would you do that to Dad?" she had asked me. "What if he came to you and said he had another daughter he wanted to meet? How would you feel about that?"
She always knew how to get to me, to appeal to my emotions, of which I had many.
"He seemed okay with it," I had said, a little hurt.
"Well, of course he seemed okay with it. He didn't want to hurt your feelings." Then she had crossed her arms and sighed.
"Fine. If you want to crush our daddy by trying to have someone take his place, then fine by me, but that's on you, Sloan."
I remember how the tears stung my eyes, and I vowed right then and there that I would never hurt my dad by finding out who my real father was. After he died, I considered it, but then I didn't want my mom to feel like I was trying to replace him, so I went on about my life and watched a lot of Lifetime movies where the daughter gets a disease and has to search out her biological parents. I didn't want a disease, but I had to be prepared.
"I've never been able to argue with you," I said now. "Not even about finding out who our sperm donor was."
Caroline scrunched her nose.
"I'm sorry."
I put my hand over my chest and made a face like I was having a heart attack.
"Ha ha," she said. "My apologies are not that rare, but it wasn't right of me to talk you out of finding out who our sperm donor was. If it was something you felt like you needed to know, I should have gotten on board."
I smiled.
"Of all the bitchy things you ever said to me, the one about replacing Daddy might take the cake." "That's really saying something."
She paused and looked down at her hands, the massive apology diamond James had bought her catching my eye.
"But Dad wasn't the reason why I didn't want to meet our sperm donor."
"Were you scared?"
"Maybe a little, but I was most worried about Emerson. It would be like you and I had this whole family that she wasn't a part of. I didn't want her to feel left out."
I squeezed her hand.
"Caroline, that may be the most selfless thing you've ever done."
She swallowed and nodded regally.
"I know," she said very seriously, and we both burst out laughing.
"If you want to know now," she said, "I'm okay with that. I could handle it." I smiled and raised my eyebrows.
"Do you want to know?"
"No, but I will if you want to."
I shook my head. Nah, I'm fine. I don't need to open that door. My life is complicated enough. I paused. Plus, I mean, I know she's 26, but I kind of feel like it would be worse for Emerson now than it would have been when we were kids. I mean, it's like we get this replacement father and hers is still dead. Caroline shrugged. Yeah, I guess. Mommy! I heard AJ call from down the hall. Good timing, Caroline said. We stood up and I hugged her again. Thank you, I said. Thank you, thank you, thank you. She smiled. I love you. I know, I said, before turning and rushing out the door to hear what the second, Mommy, I need you, was all about. I realized then that I felt almost strangely relieved I would never have to talk about my sperm donor again. I could spend the rest of my life content in the knowledge that my father was my father, and that was all that mattered. In some ways, it was as big a relief as knowing that my final balance was zero. It was no big secret. Caroline hated doctor's offices. She hated the germs, the people, the general smell. I swear I didn't think we would get her through her hospital tour when she had Preston. Needless to say, she wasn't the first one volunteering to go to the doctor with Emerson. I, on the other hand, wanted to go, but we weren't sure what excuse we could use to leave together without Mom wanting to come along. Plus, once Mark saw those bruises on his beloved Emerson, there was no way he was going to miss her appointment. Mom had taken Grammy to lunch, Taylor was napping, and AJ and I were playing what felt like our 100th game of Candyland when Mark's car appeared in the front driveway. I grabbed AJ's hand and Taylor's monitor and flew down the stairs at top toddler speed to the guest house, where we'd all decided to meet after Emerson's doctor's appointment. A somber-looking Emerson was leaning against a protective-looking Mark. So? Caroline asked breathlessly. So it's not great, Emerson said. Mark interrupted her.
But we don't know that for sure yet.
She shrugged. Okay, true. But he said from my initial blood work and the pattern of my bruising that it looked like it was aplastic anemia. The part of me that was sure she was going to say leukemia or cancer was relieved, but the part of me that wasn't sure what those scary medical words meant was terrified. But Caroline knew what they meant. Do they know why you aren't producing new red blood cells? I mean, could it be a virus? Autoimmune disease? Back up a minute here, I said, looking at Caroline in disbelief. One, how do you know so much about aplastic anemia? Two, what even is that? Caroline bit her lip. Well, when I saw her, I did a lot of Googling. It's like anemia, but on steroids. Basically, your body quits making new red blood cells, which is a problem because, you know, oxygen. So is it treatable? Mark interjected.
They aren't even positive that's what it is yet.
Yeah, right. We got it, Mark, Caroline said. He was annoying me, too. This was our little sister. He was the brand new boyfriend. Well, I mean, brand new if you didn't count the 3 years in high school. We would be asking the questions here. There are treatments, Emerson said. I don't even have to ask, Sloane, Caroline said. Either one of us will give you our bone marrow without a second thought. Of course. Now I was starting to worry. Bone marrow transplants were not a simple matter, and this was really major if she potentially needed to have a bone marrow transplant. I could tell Emerson was trying not to cry, but even still, she said, I probably can't have children. Mark pulled her closer into him. My heart sank for her. I couldn't imagine that. I had seen what Caroline had gone through trying to have another baby, and she already had Vivi. I will have a baby for you, Emerson. I have a beautiful uterus. I cleared my throat. My doctor's words, not mine. We all laughed. I know, she said, nodding. I know you would do anything you could. I love you both.